The Guardian.
Hello there, and thanks for taking the time to listen. I'm Sean McGinty, and I'm your host for the Guardian Social Enterprise Network podcast. This is podcast number 7. Coming up, I've been out and about in the rainy, windswept, and in parts flooded north of England at the Ambitious Communities Conference in Hebden Bridge, which was put together by locality and the Hebden Bridge Community Association. The day was full of talk of how communities can best organise themselves to take back underused assets from public ownership and use them for the benefit of the community. That was something that was powerfully illustrated as we availed ourselves of the facilities in the new build part of Hebden Bridge Town Hall. This hard-fought-for local asset transfer seemed the perfect setting to talk about the future of local people taking a real responsibility for their publicly owned buildings. And it seemed a good time, too, for an announcement from a government minister.
The onus is on them. If they say to a group or to a town council that, no, we're not going to do a deal with you, then the law is now on the side of the challenger.
More on the new rules and support packages available, as we'll shortly hear from Andrew Stunnell, the Communities Minister. Plus, we'll hear about the importance of having a wider membership in a successful social enterprise.
A membership is a very powerful thing because it means that actually it's something that is not just owned by one person and therefore at risk if that person is either knocked by a bus or gets interested in something else, but actually it's owned by many people.
That's Ed Mayo, the Secretary General of Cooperatives UK. We'll hear more from him later. And it's been a long, hard road to a community-owned Hebden Bridge Town Hall.
It's been a roller coaster. I mean, there have been times where we thought we weren't going to get the asset transfer through, and we had to fight pretty hard with a lot of support in various parts of the council to get it.
That's Peter Hurst, who's a trustee and chair of the Hebden Bridge Community Association. We'll hear more from him and the deputy leader of the local council shortly. So do stay with us.
The Guardian.
This is the Guardian Social Enterprise Network podcast. I'm Sean McGinty. So there was a lot of talk at Hebden Bridge about transferring assets from councils and the public sector in general. There was also a speech and an announcement from the government too, as the Communities Minister Andrew Stunnell came to town. So I asked him after he'd done his speech if he thought councils were positive about this asset transfer movement.
I believe they are. Not all of them, and some of them are taking a bit of time to understand the changes that we've introduce, but we've been looking all the way through this process. What are the barriers? What are the things which means that things don't happen? It isn't always councils. Councils can be very helpful, very enabling, but sometimes it is. Sometimes it's central government. And if that's the case, we want to know what is it, where is central government getting in the way? And sometimes it's a certain lack of, not ambition, but what shall I say? That people are always waiting for somebody else to do it. And so I think we also need sometimes to buck ourselves up a bit and say, hang on a minute, why am I waiting? I should be getting on with this. So wherever the barriers are, we're saying we need to knock them down, which is why, of course, we've put in place organisations to deliver that support and to give people a little bit of coaching on what to do and how to do it.
Steve Weiler from Locality, who I guess you'll have had discussions with regarding your announcement, which we'll come to in a minute, he gave a nice potted history of the last 5 years of kind of asset transfer and the whole community assets movement, if you like. Where do you see us being in 5 years? I know it's a long look ahead within the government you're perhaps in, but in 5 years' time, is it a mix of cooperatives, social enterprises delivering services? Have you got percentages in mind? Or is just this just kind of, let's see what happens?
We certainly haven't set any targets. From our point of view, the important thing is making sure that communities and localities get a better quality of service, which is more tailored to what they want to see. And also to give them the power to actually step in and do stuff, because I gave the example, it might be a simple basic one, about grass cutting. I mean, so often the people around the village green have got a better idea of when to go out and cut the grass than somebody sitting in a council depot 15 miles away. And it's those kind of things, even quite small scale things, where the community can actually do the same job better and cheaper, or a better job for the same money. And that is about what the community sees as being the need in their area and how they want to deliver that.
Now, the councils that don't deliver that, or that perhaps don't connect with the community in the way that you might hope, councils would. What are the sanctions?
We've put in place for the first time something which means that the onus is on them. If they say to a group or to a town council that, no, we're not going to do a deal with you, then the law is now on the side of the challenger. And the council has got to come up with absolutely cast iron and waterproof arguments as to why they're not going to get into a discussion with that group. So it's the very first time that that's been the case, because up to now anybody could write to the council, but the council could always drop the letter in the bin. Now they won't be able to do that.
It seems to be that the difficult thing to get my head around today has been the sheer scale of people that you need, of knowledge, of accounts, of the way that councils work, of the localism bill. This isn't really for the small entrepreneur, social entrepreneur.
No, I don't agree with that. And we've spent quite a bit of time looking at the guidance that we put out and trying to make sure that that guidance itself isn't so scary that nobody gets past it. And making it very clear that for straightforward, simple service provision, and, you know, cutting the village green grass might be an example of that. You don't need a PhD in business studies. You just need a little bit of common sense about what's needed. But we do need to recognise at the end of the day that you'd be taking on an actual public service. And of course, if you don't cut the grass, the complaints will come back to you. And if you default on the contract, then you'll have some money to pay, of course, just as the council would. So you are taking on some real responsibilities, but it's not that difficult. And the whole point of what I've announced today, which is the support that locality is giving to groups, is to just make them aware of what they need to know, how they can learn it, and how to put in a successful bid.
And there's money behind that support. There's and connections with locality, for instance. How's that going to work?
Well, we've set aside a fund spread over 3 years to provide grants to the organisations so that they can actually spend a bit of time, maybe buy a bit of expertise if there's a particular gap, to put in a bid. And we've also provided some of that money for locality and SIB to work together with ACVO to provide a network of support. There's going to be a very effective website with loads of practical examples. More and more as time goes on, this is what you do, this is what you don't do. So we're going to have a good network of support, and the money, I believe, is going to have a very important effect in just getting people to understand what they need to do.
Is this the Big Society in action?
It certainly is, yes. I mean, the Big Society, controversial words perhaps, but what it's about is giving every community the power and the capacity to do the best for the people who live in that community, and no longer believing that the only good answers come out of Whitehall. That's a discredited theory, and we've got to turn it on its head and get the power coming up from communities, not being showered on their heads from on high.
That's Communities Minister Andrew Stunnell talking to me at the Ambitious Communities Conference in Hebden Bridge, which was put together by a locality and the Hebden Bridge Community Association. This is the Guardian Social Enterprise Podcast, and I'm Sean McGinty. Now, to two of the many people who came together and fought to stop Calderdale Council selling off their town hall in Hebden Bridge. And then they fought again to get the new building done. Let's hear from them.
I'm Councillor Janet Batty, local ward councillor, part of Deputy Leader of Calderdale Council.
I'm Peter Hurst. I'm a trustee and chair of Hebden Bridge Community Association.
All right, Peter. The journey you've had, it's been quite a long one, but here we are in this nearly finished building. It looks fantastic. You're bringing this building alive. What's the journey been like?
It's been a roller coaster. I mean, there have been times where we thought we weren't going to get the asset transfer through, and we had to fight pretty hard with a lot of support in various parts of the council to get it. We got it eventually, and then as trustees we had to get our hands dirty to run it. Then of course we began to get staff, and we had to stand back and be more strategic. Less operational, and then of course we had to fight to get the new build, to get the funding, and to design the building, and to consult with the community to find out whether it was what they wanted.
How did all that manage to get pulled together? Because that's quite some effort.
Um, It happened, the spark was went back to when Councillor Batty's standing next to me here.
Pittsford, that's where it started.
It began to fight to retain assets in the town, because there was a danger in them closing. Oh, I'd be sold off for various things. That was the spark, and within the field of community development, you often need a spark like that, some kind of a push that galvanises people to take action, and that was it. And it just gathered momentum. Yes, I mean, Hebden Bridge has got its fair share of activists, people who have got experience in all sorts of things, and so we're lucky in that respect. And to that extent, what we've done here may be not replicable elsewhere. But the model is a good one.
Poacher turned gamekeeper, in a sense. You were on the Community Association.
Yes.
Now you're Deputy Leader of the Council. I suppose you
nothing's
still...
Nothing's changed. I'm still the same person.
You're still the same person.
As I said earlier, I'm basically a ward councillor. Yeah. And this partly came out of Pitt Street, the sale over our heads of the adult education centre, when we were given no chance to stop it, no chance to intervene. And shortly after that, there was a big community planning event scheme here, the Upper Calder Valley Renaissance, and in the Hebden Bridge town team we were charged to come up with 5 priority projects, and the town hall was one of the projects. And it started, as I think you heard earlier, it started with a working group that I chaired with the parish and town councils, because they were passionate about it. Mm. Because at the change of the councils in 1974, the town and parish councils had lost all of their buildings, because they transferred from the old parish and town councils, the urban district councils, they transferred to the new Calderdale council, and one by one it seemed that Calderdale had sold them off. And the town hall felt as though it was the last one, and what they weren't going to let happen was for the town hall, the council offices, for that to be sold. And I remember an early meeting when we had the head of buildings from Calderdale Council come to a meeting in the council chamber, and we said to her, "What are your plans for the council offices?" And she said, "We don't have any." And we didn't know what to read into that. Did it mean that they really didn't know what to do with it, or did it mean that they were about to sell it? And that sort of started to galvanise us.
What about people around the country that look at your experience and go, "Fantastic, I really want to get involved with that"? What's your top piece of advice? I'll ask you both. Best piece of advice for somebody going, "The council's selling everything off, how do we stop them"?
I think probably to look around to see what other people have done and to learn from their experience, because there's a lot of experience now up and down the country, and there's different kinds of asset transfers, and there's no single model which is appropriate to every community or to every service. So you've got to sort of tailor make what you do to a particular service and to your community.
The two things I'd say is I think that any group needs to know what its purpose is, what it wants to do, and you have to keep sight of that vision and purpose. And then there's also something about just keeping going. I mean, Peter made it sound not relatively easy, but it's not easy, but I mean, there's been so many hurdles and there's been problems of all sorts of sizes. And because I know that over the last 18 months, 2 years, one of the things that I've done is to do some behind the scenes unpicking of problems. You know, you can think, I think they, you know, the trustees, the planning group, you can think that the next problem, you know, the problem that's just come up, that it's going to be the one that will stop you, but it can't be. And you have
just to keep going.
You have to find ways around it, and if you've got so far, you just simply mustn't stop. The community expects you to keep going.
Councillor Janet Batty and trustee of the Hebden Bridge Community Association Peter Hurst talking to me at the Ambitious Communities Conference in Hebden Bridge. Any thoughts you have would be gratefully accepted. You can tweet at Guardian Sockent or at Sean A. McGinty, and also please find your way to socialenterprise.guardian.co.uk and join the Guardian
Guardian Social Enterprise Network. Now, social entrepreneurs come in all shapes, sizes and legal structures. Now, I've looked through much of the reading you'd have to do to transfer a council-owned asset, and this seems like a job for a lot more than a single entrepreneur. So Ed Mayo, who's Secretary General of Cooperatives UK, gave an interesting and entertaining presentation involving a cat called Tiddles, a bucket with a hole in, and dropping some buttered toast. I asked him what a cooperative grouping like his can offer to local people who want to get hold of an underused asset.
Asset transfer, you know, is where imagination needs to meet hard practicality. And really, you know, unearthing the skills within the community, not just to be able to get through the bureaucratic system, to be able to make a long-term business success for the community.
What scares me as a social entrepreneur, and also that somebody that sort of comes to events like this, is the sheer scale of knowledge. This isn't a one-person thing. The social entrepreneur that's out there doing great stuff in their community as one or two people, very difficult to get involved with this kind of asset transfer.
Well, I think, you know, we've had 10 or 15 years of the idea that change happens through individual social entrepreneurs, and I think that idea is beginning to change or just rebalance, in a sense that individuals have a role but they need other people along with them. It's about followership as much as leadership. The first cooperative was set up in 1844 in Rochdale by 28 Rochdale pioneers. You know, I sometimes think today they'd be called one social entrepreneur and 27 others, but it doesn't really capture what is needed. And you do need different skills. You do need the ability to have somebody to be a catalyst and to be a facilitator of change. But successful community initiatives are going to need different skills. But particularly over time, you have to have the business skills to make sure that an asset is an asset. My core message was the big society is not about the parcelling out of opportunity per se. It's about the parcelling out of risk and of responsibility. And if you're able to handle that risk and take on responsibility, then you can get the opportunity. But it's a tough old world out there. Cooperatives are not committees and are not committee-based. They're social enterprises with membership. And membership is a very powerful thing because it means that actually it's something that is not just owned by one person and therefore at risk if that person is either knocked by a bus or gets interested in something else, but actually it's owned by many people. I think social enterprises and social entrepreneurs are waking up to the power of the membership model.
I mean, it's interesting that the social enterprise model that we have at the moment, in a sense, you have a nod towards, in your accounts, a nod towards your social responsibility and maybe a nod towards having a board of the people, the stakeholders and all that sort of thing. Tell us how cooperatives deal with your social responsibility. How is that sort of enshrined within a cooperative?
And cooperatives are about member benefit. That's the core to cooperatives. You can run them on a wider community benefit model, but the core of it is about self-help and mutual aid. So I'll take an example. Who Made Your Pants is a social enterprise based in Southampton that employs people that are refugee women and gives them skills for working in the fashion industry. Also very nice recycled knickers as well. Now, if that was a social enterprise, you think that's great, they're providing employment. But it's not. It's something more. It's a workers' cooperative. So it's a social enterprise where the owners are those women themselves. And you cannot believe the difference from a paternalistic model that says we're providing employment for people in need and something that is self-help and mutual aid where those women are doing it for themselves. And the latter is genuinely transformative. So in terms of long-term social change, it's not just about doing things, it's about doing things with people.
How, as a social entrepreneur that might be listening to this podcast and is going, look, I do what I do this with a council, I do that, I'm kind of somehow getting through, delivering what I want to deliver, possibly earning a living out of it, some of them, few of them. Can they convert? Because you're making a very powerful argument. Is there a conversion process? What sort of, you know, they will have members in a sense, they will have users, they will have a group around them that kind of get what they do and appreciate the social value in that. Can that convert somehow to a cooperative?
I think many social entrepreneurs do this very naturally, so it's not something difficult to ask. But what you're doing is you're reaching out to those people who are involved in your social enterprise and bringing them in a formal way as members. One of the most sort of greatest sort of secrets hidden, for example, is that for community interest companies, it's relatively easy to convert to a cooperative model of a community interest company, which is where those members have an equal vote in the kind of, you know, the kind of AGM process. And that simple step, again, begins to enfranchise those people who are involved in the enterprise. So this is not a big change, but in some ways it's social enterprise returning to its roots. In some ways, cooperatives, you know, were the first social enterprises. They were the first social networks. So it is just about relearning why some of those were successful, while keeping hold of the kind of the energy and the imagination that has come out so wonderfully, you know, with the modern social enterprise sector.
That's Ed Mayo from Cooperatives UK talking to me at the Ambitious Communities Conference at Hebden Bridge Town Hall. So we're in a building obtained from the council, built with community spirit and with thousands of hours of volunteers' time. We heard from the minister responsible, we've heard from groups who have taken over other council assets, and the whole place buzzed with ideas and chat of what could be possible for people in their hometowns. I spoke with Steve Weiler, the chief executive of Locality, and asked him how he thought the day he'd helped organise had gone.
I'm really pleased with it. It's just great to have a room absolutely packed with people from across Yorkshire. In fact, some from far flung across the country that come together, celebrate the success here in Hebden Bridge, but also stories bubbling up everywhere about what people are doing in many, many other communities, some very poor ones, some very challenging, but there's a spirit abroad that is, you know, in these gloomy times, really quite a welcome thing.
Now there's some support coming up as well. We had the Minister here, Andrew Stunnell, who announced some support. Perhaps I'll let you explain how that works, because you're involved as an organisation.
Yeah. Well, there are some new powers in the Localism Act that ought to make it just a little bit easier for community groups to take over land and buildings that really matter to them, to look at services in their local neighbourhood and say, well, that service isn't being run very well, maybe we could run it better. And also to think about new developments in their community, things that they might do by themselves or perhaps with developers and other partners, and make them happen. So these new powers in the Localism Act, and what the government have announced today is that for community groups across the country there will be some support. We will be delivering advice and support services to community groups and others that want to use the powers. And with some of our partners, there will also be some grants available. Small grants to do feasibility studies, for example, and in some cases larger grants to do the kind of more ambitious development. So, you know, not much money around at this time, but so this is a precious resource. It will be available for the next 3 years, so we hope we'll get some really good results from it.
Just briefly, what sort of groups can get involved with that then? Who do you want to apply? Who do you want to approach Locality?
We want to see people, community organisations, or sometimes people in communities with strong ideas who want to come together with other neighbours and you know, others in their community and want to make things happen. It's really about people who have some ideas, some pride in their neighbourhood, who recognise that even in difficult places there are fantastic resources if they can just bring them to the surface. People, buildings, things that are derelict, not being used properly. Let's see if we can turn them around. The kind of people that will really, and the kind of organisations that do well in this, are the kind of organisations that were here today. And somebody said to me, you know, I don't understand the meaning of the word no. I never say, can we? I say, how can we? And it's that kind of spirit that we're looking for.
That's Steve Wyler, the Chief Executive of Locality, talking to me at the Ambitious Communities Conference at the now community-owned Hebden Bridge Town Hall. So here's how you get in touch with us. You can email me at seanmcginty.co.uk or david.mills@guardian.co.uk. Please go to socialenterprise.guardian.co.uk and make your thoughts known there on this podcast. And you can look at all the fabulous news and interviews on there too. Now, if you're on Twitter, you can tweet us your thoughts to @guardiansockent, or my personal Twitter is @seanamcginty. Please remember, share us with your friends and colleagues in the usual way. I'm Sean McGinty. Thanks for listening and see you next time for more news, comment and information from the Guardian Social Enterprise Network. You should join it. It's free.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.